estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 524. I'm Adam, and it doesn't do wood, and is Mary Lang.
Isn't travelling with you one big spoiler?
Ben Shoveler.
Well. I'll come up with one. All right, hold on. Here's one.
Yes.
From the episodes that we're reviewing, done in the style of a current companion.
It's the Vastinarada.
Oh, yes. Well done. And, of course, it's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
This podcast has been edited for tone and content by the Fellman Lux Automated Decency Filter.
Very good.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan has left the library. Kirby Bartlett Sloan has been saved.
And what was the original one you wanted to do, Kirby?
The Fellman Lux one.
Hey, who turned out the lights?
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's right.
Yes. What did we do last time?
The thing is that what I just did was a modification on what I did 9 years ago.
So what did we do last time? What was the consensus? No? Okay, right.
We did a whole bunch of
different ones?
Different ones.
Yes. Okay, we'll leave it at that then.
Lydia... I almost did ice cream.
Oh, Lydia Robin says, right on time. Hi. And then the coyotes after you. I love Wile E. Coyote. And Brandon Moore, sorry I'm late. What do you mean you're late? We haven't just started. We haven't even started. We sort of have started just a little bit. Sorry I'm late. I just had to pop to the shops, get some ice cream. Hang on, there's some screaming going on in the house. Interested to find out what that's all about. Bear with. Talk away, Ben. What's going on?
So, Adam is currently sorting out a dispute between his wife and his daughter. Now, being used to these kind of things, I can guarantee it'll be something over absolutely nothing.
Yes, it was something over nothing. The BAFTAs have started, and the girls are watching the BAFTAs in the other room, knowing full well I won't be watching them until after the podcast, so I'm avoiding spoilers to my heart's content.
Oh, and
is Doctor Spoiler Who up for any?
What?
Is Doctor Who up for any BAFTAs?
The British Academy Film Awards.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't actually clarify that, to be fair. The television awards for a few months yet. Okay, so we can talk about... Oh, dear, sorry. We can talk about...
Where's Debbie?
Oh, she really should have been available for this one.
Left the library.
It's poor, poor show. When we've been built it up over these years about Isla's fear of the Vastinarada, and she doesn't show up for it. But there you go. Such is life. So the episode one begins. That's episode one, i.e. Silence in the Library, begins with a little girl floating around this rather immense library and looking like she's also in the middle of a consultation with a doctor and her dad in the background and stuff. And suddenly she's in this room and the doctor and Donna barge in and the
Donna.
Episode begins. Donna. What?
Dr. Donna.
Yes. So then we go back to the doctor and Donna leaving the TARDIS, having just arrived at the beautifully rendered empty library. Well, it's not empty as in books and stuff, got loads of books, but empty of people. And they start walking around and have a little discussion about how wonderful this library is, and the doctor then realises there's nobody there and does a little tweak of the computer that tells them that only two, you know, humanoid life forms are there, but there are 100 million, whatever it says, a Google of other life forms there.
Master?
Yes?
This was actually filmed in an actual library.
Actually filmed in an actual library.
Yeah,
so it's actual.
It was the Swansea Library. They were in the midst of moving. So they had they were able to film for days and days and days. And because they were moving, books were all over the place, but not entirely.
Splendid. Thank you for that. Anyway, they meet one of these node thingies, which has got rather creepily got a face, a human face on it. But they're a bit like the sort of, almost like a A-L-E-X-A of the library, aren't they, Kirby?
You don't have to, you can say...
No, Alexa. I can't, shut up.
Hey, Alexa, enable simple radio skill.
You twonk. Right then, anyway, so they're walking...
Hey, Alexa, play the indie rock disco radio.
What's the indie rock disco radio?
It's my radio station, you cretin.
Anyway...
He must have turned off his Alexa. I turned mine off because...
Oh, shut up! Anyway, so they're wandering through the library, and suddenly the lights started going out, and they sort of realise they're being chased by this creepy thing. And they barge into this room, and the same scene again with the little girl, but it actually turns out to be this sort of wooden ball thing with a camera on it. And, of course, when the doctor realises there's a person in it, because it starts printing in sort of digital text on the little display what the little girl's saying, Cal, and the doctor obviously goes sorry. Anyway, so the little girl is still in the middle of this sort of what they call it when you're sort of gone to see a psychiatrist about a sort of problem, what they call it,
therapy
session.
A what session?
Oh.
A therapy session.
That's what I'm... I can't form a bell. Hang on, bud. There you are. Get that off. I've got it stuck on a load of wires. There we go. I mean, obviously, I don't want Laurie, who bought us the bell, to get cross that we don't use it anymore. Anyway, that's right. So... So the doctor... Then we get this sort of really creepy lighting and the appearance of these sort of shadows, which are the Vashta Narada, that obviously if there's more than one shadow, then it's a Vashta Narada and it's going to eat you. Now, the only problem I have with this thing is that they do imply there's lots and lots of these Vashta Naradas, so why they just sort of don't eat them all straight away, no faffing around, but they do tend to faff a little bit. Oh, go on then. I'll let you this one.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Okay, that's fine. But it does have an opportunity to eat them all very quickly without any fuss, but it doesn't.
They have to be in a shadow that's got them in it, in the light.
But it does make for good telly, so I'll let them off. Right then. So there's a sort of message comes through that they have arrived. They being River Song and her red shirts, because most of them do get done in for the rest of the story. And of course she's hello sweetie. Now having seen all of the River Song's lifetime essentially in Doctor Who after this, and now going back and rewatching this, a lot of it sort of makes you feel a bit nostalgic, shall we say, and it's very interesting to watch the dialogue and the sort of relationship, the incredible acting of Alex Kingston to pull this off.
Really?
Well, in relation to the fact she's known the Doctor for many years, obviously she does look a bit younger than she does when she does actually.
I thought about that too. I said she looks so much younger, but she shouldn't be.
Exactly. Yeah. I think they should have thunk about that, shouldn't they, Mary? But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's what it is.
Well, when they filmed this, they didn't even know Moffat was going to be showrunner and would continue this thing.
But he was going to be writing for Doctor Who, I'd imagine. Yes. They would have brought her back.
It was announced just before this episode that he was going to be the next showrunner.
Oh, okay.
But they didn't know when they were filming it. Or writing it, I'm fairly sure that he had it in mind that
people on set knew, but you know, the public announcement came just before the broadcast of these episodes.
Anyway, so this group of people, Professor Riversong, who's an archaeologist, knows the Doctor. Doctor doesn't know her, and there's also a young girl.
Brilliant! It's so brilliant.
A young girl there called Miss Evangelista, who they're bullying, basically. But not River Song. She doesn't bully her. But they sort of, the rest of the gang bully her and totally ignore her and treat her like absolute Anyway, so the Doctor's a bit sort of appalled that these people have turned up, bearing in mind he knows what's going on, and it just sort of adds to the potential, you know, death toll. And they're rather trapped. So, and again, this part of the story is very much a base under siege story where they're all trying to sort of keep track on these shadows. And then a door opens and Miss Vangelista notices the doors open. And says, excuse me. Oh, shut up, you thick person. We don't want to speak to you because we're bullying you. Just don't talk to us.
This place for a red shirt.
Yeah. But while all that's going on, River Songs takes the Doctor to one side and gets out her iconic diary and asks him where they're at in the timeline. Again, listening to what she's saying about, you know, well, have we done this yet? Obviously, we've seen some of the instances that she refers to while talking to him.
Yeah.
Is rather charming.
Master. Yes? It was a while after we actually saw the Byzantium.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hook it together with her saying this and this
mm-hmm.
Story until I rewatched this story. And it was probably months before I realized that the Time of Angels was referenced.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is funny in this story to hear her talk about those things that were meaningless then. But
And I like the way that they did weave those comments into future episodes of the show. And I do love David Tennant, his sort of slight creeped outness, with the way the River sort of really sort of showing this sort of intimate affection by sort of touching his face and sort of, you know, he's sort of looking really confused and creeped out. Really adore that. Then they keep on flashing back to Cal sort of playing in her little living room and drawing pictures and trying to watch the telly. Yes, Kirby.
I do have an issue with her going, you look so young and everything. The last time I saw you, you were in the suit with the new haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And she should have known the time. She says later, she doesn't seem to quite know where she is either, but it's as if she doesn't realize that, the 10th Doctor, I mean, when it's confusing. It's timey-wimey, never mind.
Well, it's timey-wimey, yes.
Let me break in to say here, too, that at the time, knowing Moffat was taking over, and he was already looking for, you know, who the next Doctor would be, his plan was to cast an older Doctor.
Yeah.
He was even approaching Peter Capaldi at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when she makes the comment, you're so young, you know, that was in anticipation of him casting an older Doctor.
Mm. But then eventually it happened.
Yeah, yeah. Matt Smith walked in and blew everybody, you know, out of the water, then that changed.
Yeah, but knowing obviously how River has Time Lord stuff in her and her being able to look into the Doctor's eyes and see the almost in his soul, I suppose. She has certain powers, doesn't she, we see from time to time connected to how she came about. But anyway, back to Doctor. There we go. Oh, yeah. So Cal is watching. She sees the Doctor and his friends on the telly and starts talking to him. And, she sort of flicks through the channels because I think the channel changes and they keep losing the link. And the more we travel through that episode, the more appalled and rather desperate River Song is when she realises the Doctor really doesn't know her, and she can't tell him about stuff, and it's almost seems unbearable to her that she has to maintain this spoilers thing and this, you know, not being able to say what's going to happen, because she knows if the Doctor dies in this episode, all that stuff that they're going to experience will never happen. So onwards, like I say, Mr. Vangelista goes through the hole and there's a scream and they all go through and there's a heartbreaking scene. And it's very painful and sort of awkward to watch when River sort of pulls out her little sort of data fob thingy on her thing and her last words and her last sort of consciousness is sort of fading away as they try to speak to her. And the great acting by Catherine Tate, as she's the one that she wants to say goodbye to.
It's brilliant.
and it does tug at heartstrings. Well, it should, yes, do, because that's what it's designed to do, and it's really, really well done. Slightly sick that they would have that facility on the suit, yeah, but
yeah. Well, it's a science fiction fantasy.
Yeah, no, it's all right. It's not terrible. I did get a slight bit of remorse from the rest of her crew who, you know, were so horrible to her. But on they go to try and resolve this sort of potential death situation, and then one of the Daves dies, doesn't he? As another scene.
I love that they have proper Dave and other Dave.
Yeah, I like that too. Anyway, he dies, and it's the bits leading up to his death. Obviously, when the Doctor realizes there's two Shadow, and he carefully puts the helmet on, and the fear in his eyes. Again, brilliant acting, because you feel like you're in that situation yourself, and you're watching him, and you think, "Oh God, yeah." So anyway, he gets done in, and the where they do the death, where he sort of just shakes a little bit, and hey, who turned out the lights? And it's yeah, of course, it's iconic, isn't it? It's almost as iconic as the Are You My Mummy thing, but same writer. So the Doctor decides he's got to get Donna out of this situation, and he cons her into a transmat thing and tries to get her into the TARDIS, but she just disappears. She gets briefly onto the TARDIS and then vanishes. So, sorry, I'm going to whip through this a little bit because it's a two-part story. Anyway, so... because what the Doctor does to try and sort of confuse that Vashnarada is tint the visors to make the Vashnarada, or try to think the Vashnarada are going to know that, or get confused about whether they're already inside the suit. So River has a squareness gun. Yay! I wonder where she got that from. And she uses it for them to escape that little room. And then... the Doctor's having a problem with his sonic screwdriver, and River gets out her sonic screwdriver, which obviously results in another load of confusion for the Doctor. Excuse me, my throat's gone funny. So as they're travelling through, the Doctor asks one of the nodes a question, and the node turns around, and it's Donna's face.
And, no!
And yes, when we watched it the first time, we think, oh dear, that's not a very good sign for old Donna, is it?
Oh yeah, she's I remember watching this the first time and going, I was just absolutely, I thought it was one of the best episodes I'd ever seen, and I loved the cliffhanger.
Good cliffhanger.
I'm trying to remember if by this point we were actually getting these when we were close to when you were getting them.
I couldn't tell you, because I don't live where you do. Oh, okay, fine. You must have got them somehow, and you probably got them in ways in which you're not supposed to get BBC.
Yeah, episodes. I was probably getting them that way. I don't. But by the time of the 50th, I was actually watching on BBC America or whatever. Yeah,
that's what I was watching them on, was BBC America.
But anyway, there is a point actually watching it back when Donna gets ripped out of the TARDIS console room that Cal does say Donna Noble has been saved. So at the time it didn't pick up on that. It was quite clever, you know, you didn't pick up the has been saved to the computer, the fact this is all a big computer. I thought that was really, really clever. And of course she shows up at this sort of convalescent home, which very quickly jumps from one place to the next, and to save the confusion of the bits in between, Dr. Moon just says, "And then you remembered."
Yes.
I wish somebody would say that to me, then I could remember a hell of a lot of stuff I've forgotten. But anyway, and so very quickly she meets a stuttery man that she falls in love with, gets married and has kids with, and it is literally very quickly. She sort of remembers the Doctor and the library a little bit. Especially when the Doctor makes a sort of ghostly appearance in her living room at one stage. And so anyway, back in the library, they're still trying to find a way out safely, which they've got absolutely no chance of doing. And the Doctor is trying to get some information out of River. And the only way she can get the Doctor to trust her is by whispering something in her ear. And that is, listen to the 20
You're a crap actress.
I said crass because you told you. I said pod crass then, thanks to you, Ben. I made a right mess of that. Would have been a really good. No, well, never mind. I'll move on. Right. So, and then there's a, you know, the, remember the scene earlier on where Miss Evangelista meant, excuse me, and they said, shut up. The other lady, I've forgotten her name. Darn. Who's the other lady that went through most of the episode dead, but they didn't realise?
Miss Evangelista?
No, the other one. The one that the doctor gets cross. Sorry?
Anita.
That's it, Anita, yeah. She okay. She sort of says, there's something wrong, and they sort of initially ignore her. But when she says, I've got two shadows, they suddenly turn around and, again, they have to move on very quickly. After a bit of family life, Donna gets a sort of message from a mysterious woman and goes to the park to meet her. And that mysterious woman is Miss Evangelista with a hood on because her face has gone a bit winky wonky, timey wainy. The doctor finds a way of communicating with the beneficiary through one of the Daves, whichever Dave, is it real Dave? I can't remember. The Dave
that's not the one name is proper Dave, and then other Dave, not real Dave.
One of the Daves. I don't know which is the yes. proper one or real one. Anyway, yes. Moving on forward a bit. Yeah.
Well, what scene are you talking about?
Miss Evangelista knows has more knowledge about the library and Donna's.
No, I mean
fake,
which Dave you know, scene are you talking
I
about?
I can't remember the one where he's sort of he's actually managed to communicate with the Dave as if he's actually communicating with the Vashtanarada. It's a little conversation with it. No, okay, move on.
That's the other Dave.
That was the other Dave, is it? Okay. And of course, Anita talks to River about the Doctor and how River knows the Doctor and stuff. I'm not quite sure at this stage whether this is dead Anita. I think it is a dead Anita because they have now taken over Anita while her little dying embers are flashing away so as they can pretend to be her and find out a bit more about the Doctor. And
yeah, at some point the Doctor says, how long has she been dead or something like that.
Yeah.
I like Anita. Yes,
Donna enjoys her sort of family life and stuff. I think it's really what she's always wanted up to then and after that, you know, a husband and a family. It's what she's always longed for, and she's got it at this time. And when she finds out that it's all fake, she really doesn't like it and almost runs away and tries to grab her children. But at the same time, Cal is having a bit of a meltdown, literally, and starts turning everybody off. The Dr. Moon gets turned off, Dad gets deleted, and she sort of really has a meltdown. In the middle of doing that, Donna's children disappear, and the scene where the two children sort of vanish, again, what a sort of scene for Catherine Tate again. It was really sort of tore your heart out when these kids
yes.
had not been on the screen in the episode for very long at all, but she really did make that scene real. It's beautifully done and put together, beautifully shot. Again, excellent direction in the story.
That playground's been torn down.
Yes, playground's been torn down.
The bandstand is still there in that park, but the playground is gone.
Okay. Anyway, Lux manages to get them through to the sort of mainframe part of the computer and knows quite a lot about it because it's his family. It's Cal is his auntie, although he said it was his grandfather's daughter. Surely that makes her his auntie, doesn't it? I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's how it works in families. Anyway, then we get to the scene where he realises Anita's dead and sort of buys a day. Because he says, and I like that quote when he says, look, I'm the doctor. This is the biggest library in the world. Look me up. That was a quote I was going to use because it's quite iconic. And they said, I'll give you a day then. And then they leave the empty suit of Anita, and the doctor's determined to solve the whole situation by sacrificing himself, and so River Song whacks him around the head, knocks him out, and puts herself in the death chair herself, and then sort of.
What are you doing with handcuffs?
Again, I know Ben's obviously alluded to that he doesn't rate Alex Kingston as an actress, but I still think that's an amazing scene between the two of them as she sacrifices herself. And poor old Donna again, who realises she's trying to sort of hold on to her husband, is pulled out, and everybody's resurrected. Everybody lives! The library's back in action. And then there's a scene where poor old, the doctor's really, really sad. He's still sort of handcuffed to this sort of thing. And he's sort of looking, we don't actually see the chair, but he's looking at the chair. We know he's looking at the chair where River was deaded. And I'm thinking, how's he going to get out of those handcuffs again? Who's got the key? So I was going to do a little scene on the podcast of me just dipping out to sort of unlock them for him. But then I realised I haven't got the key either. But the next scene is...
It's because I've got the key, because I've got the secret.
No, but Ben, I realised too late that I've got the sonic screwdriver, and here it is. Oh, it's not working. Oh, I did have the sonic
screwdriver. I got the key, I got secret.
I got one, that's the master's laser. Oh, here's one, this one might work. Let's have a look at this one, this one might work. Where's the button? Oh, here's one. Hey! So there we are. That would be how I would have fixed it. Anyway, somebody fixed the situation. And the Doctor and Donna are reunited, rather unenthusiastically in the part of the Doctor, who thought Donna was dead a few moments ago. She's sort of... And she's a bit sad as well, because she's not got a husband anymore. And then even sadder, the fact that her husband's got a bit of a stutter, there was a missed opportunity just as he was teleported away.
That one really tugs at your heart.
Again, there's a few things that tug at your heart in this particular story. Anyway, so... And then we have a scene of the temptation of River Song's diary. And so the Doctor and Donna walk away, and the camera zooms into the sonic screwdriver and the diary, and then suddenly he's run back. And he realises that why would he have given her a screwdriver? Because there's one of those little flashy data core things in it. And he plugs River Song into the computer and sort of saves her that way instead.
Is it, is it lucky that, I mean, it's just that particular data thing is just barely running out?
Well, that's just typical TV stuff, isn't it? So it's what happens in TVs. Programs.
Oh, is it a science fiction fantasy TV program?
And of course, there's the other thing I forgot to mention earlier on about that's what River said about the Doctor would open up the TARDIS by a click of his fingers. And I do like that scene at the end where he does actually do that. And then he closes it. And then we see River sort of with the three children, including Cal. End of episode. Right. I think I did right. How are we doing? 36. I'm doing quite well at the moment. Right then. I don't think I've... anybody wants to listen to a more in-depth version of the synopsis of that story, can go back to... Kirby has a database as to when the episode we previously reviewed this story on. But I think that's covered
Master,
it quite well. Yes?
I listened to that today, and we did not actually get much more in-depth than we just did now.
Oh, good. Well, obviously, that's the theme. We should continue to do so. Right, I'm going to say what I think about it. I was watching this with great sort of interest and engagement. And yes, I can accept that there's no Doctor Who story which is perfect. None, even my favourite ones are not absolutely perfect. And Ben's alluded to maybe he thinks that Alex Kingston's, you know, acting wasn't that good. Well, I have a different opinion, but I accept that, you know, some people might think otherwise. But the word, I mean, you won't like this. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I'm going to offend anybody who's listening or watching the show.
I'm so sorry.
But the term masterpiece falls into my mouth as I watch this story. It's a two-parter, and I don't normally like sort of two-parters or six-parters, but this story is utter brilliance. And I suspect that RTD did edit some of it to make it a bit more brilliant than Stephen Moffat's original script. But it's so good, and probably could be my favourite of the David Tennant era. I think it's absolute genius. So, and I know I might have to get the deer bit ready for Ben, but what do you think about it, Kirby?
Absolutely brilliant. I, th- this, I would say this is my favorite of. That's just so hard in this particular series because there are so many excellent ones, but probably this pair is my favorite of this of the series, and it's nearly perfect. Nearly perfect.
Yeah, you can't be absolutely perfect, but it is a masterpiece.
My only quibbles are our technology quibbles, and
yeah.
So what? I mean, I've been bothered by the little computer fans in the helmets forever. I'm also the little data communication things have USB ports on them in the far future, and also I'm bothered by the clean plastic skeletons. Particularly the clean plastic skull in the helmet. And also there's the trope of having the light inside of a helmet where if you actually had a light inside of your helmet, you wouldn't be able to see out. But of course, if they had done the skeletons like they did the chicken bone, it would be gross. So, but other than that, this is just one of my absolute favorite stories. And, several weeks ago when I sat down with Fred and we were watching things, we just could not stop.
Mm.
We just continued on and finished the rest of this series.
This is the only story that I've watched out of order.
What?
You know, we're watching this order and I've been sticking to that. But when we got to the last, you know, when River Song's last episode with Peter Capaldi, I went back and watched this. And then there was also someone posted on YouTube a River Song's timeline video, which is really clever and I quite enjoyed. But this is when I went rant and beat. So I think this is probably the one I watched the most out of all of the new era Doctor Who's. But now I'm starting to get a bit worried because...
Wait, what about Ben?
Ben, go on, give it...
What, yeah, what about Ben?
Ben. Oh no.
See, it's funny.
Is it? No, it's not. It's not funny at all. It's hot.
A lot of people, you know, think the same thing about a lot of things. But then occasionally, someone pops up with a view that may not be popular. And he knows it may not be popular. But he still doesn't care.
Well, there's a surprise.
Whereas the entire world seems to think this is a wonderful episode, or couple of episodes, and the River Song story arc seems to be quite popular with most people, I flipping hated the lot of it. I despise the River Song story arc. It is utter bobbins. A lot of it doesn't make sense. It writes itself to try and make sense, and it just doesn't. It's Stephen Moffat. Here we go. Here's something I haven't had for a while.
Wondered how long it would take before you said it, is it if it's a swear word.
It's Stephen Moffat trying to be over-clever, just like he did for his entire run as showrunner. It's overcomplicated, it's unnecessary, it's not needed, and I just think the whole meeting someone at the end and then the beginning and then the beginning is the end, it doesn't make sense. It's just bothered
to death. So I thought, Ben, it would...
I despise the episodes. The whole River Song story arc is rubbish. I'm not a fan of Alex Kingston at all. I think she was awful in EastEnders.
I didn't see her in EastEnders.
She was awful as River Song. She overacts. I appreciate there would be people who think she's absolutely wonderful. She was in EastEnders. I'm sure she was, yeah.
I know she was in... She was in Mulflanders and ER. That's what I remember her from.
Maybe
Grange Hill many years ago.
But I just... Oh, she just overacts, and I just do not appreciate that style of... It feels like it's so forced the whole time, and it's just like, I'm an actress and I'm acting, look at me. I can't stand her. If Alex ever hears this, I do apologise. I'm sure you are a wonderful, wonderful actress, really, and you've achieved a whole lot more in your career than I ever have in mine, apart from the fact that you haven't worked on 15 radio stations, but we'll let that lie. But yeah, it's not for me. It's wibbly wobbly timey wimey crap.
See, you know, Stephen, I'm pretty sure it deserves at least an alright, but no, fine.
It doesn't even get it's an alright. I despise these episodes. It's the start of Doctor Who going wrong for me. It's the Stephen Moffat influence over the whole series, which you don't need to go back through the timeline to work out what I thought of that. So yeah, for me, no thank you. On to the next one.
Okay. Right. So we got on the timeline, Brandon Moore.
Wrong.
On the timeline, Brandon Moore says Anita. Lillian Robbins says Anita. Tim Drury. Oh my God! I wasn't expecting this. He says Adam has been saved. USB will last forever. Look at the MIDI. Well, I think that's MIDI. I don't know what that means. And then Ian Kirk says, if you had no lights inside the helmets, then you would see the reflection of the camera crew.
That's true.
What camera crew? This happened. It's real, isn't it?
Lillian Robbins says, what's MIDI? I have lots of MIDI dresses. And then, as far as USB, if it's standard, why does it change practically every time I get a new phone? Alan T. Butcher says, I think Ben is thinking of Tracy Ann Oberman in EastEnders. That's true. They both got curly hair.
Actually. Yeah.
She was Kingston was in a soap, but I don't think it was EastEnders.
Strange choice.
I think I was, for some reason, I was getting EastEnders mixed up with ER. But yeah, no, it was because I'll tell you what, Dirty Den was EastEnders and George Clooney was in ER. That's the way to remember it.
Absolutely. Spot on. Ian Kirk says MIDI was a way of connecting computers to musical instruments and has lasted ages. I've got an itchy cheek. Right then, here we go, everybody. This, I'm rather worried again, but Mary?
Well, what can I say after Ben? I will say that when I first saw these two episodes, you know, eons ago, I was very confused by them. I didn't know how any of it fit together. And watching it just recently for this podcast, I was very confused. I still don't know how it all fits together.
Chuckle of glee there.
Yeah, it's a Moffat script, and he already knew he was going to be showrunner. So I think he was already seeding some of his crazy, you know, uber complicated plots, you know, that he was going to carry forward. I actually found this kind of draggy. There was just so much talking, so many things needed explaining, so that we had to, you know, every time the action would stop, all we had to hear how this thing related to that thing. We had to listen to Miss Evangelina. You know, she was like Miss Info Dump of the century. She's telling Donna Noble, you know, the entire layout of the story. I'm thinking, how did someone who was barely in this know so much about what's going on? For me, the shining light, and in this I part from Ben, the shining light acting in this was River Song, Alex Kingston. I think she was effervescent in this, and all the mystery things that she was dropping about herself made me very intrigued. Of course, this time I can look back on her timeline and think, you know, it all just kind of went downhill after this, because they were going through such hoops, twisting themselves in such knots, trying to make her timeline make sense, you know, or make us buy what actually carried on with her, you know, marrying the 11th Doctor and all that. I mean, that was so ridiculous. But in this introduction, I really enjoyed her. So that's what I have to say about it. It's not my favorite, but it's very convoluted and it keeps you tuned in.
Why, thank you, Mary. I was expecting that. Right then. So Ben is having a computer reboot issue. So he's gone off to reboot his computer, which gives us time to slip into Kirby's bit.
Okay, hang on.
For God's sake.
I was looking something up.
Thought you'd be ready. Wasn't I silly?
That's interesting. I have nothing. I just have Ian Kirk's script.
Nobody wants to give us feedback anymore. What?
This is 2 weeks in a row where we're not getting feedback. People.
What's going on?
I know. Well, I've got some audio.
Well, good evening, 20 Megawriters. Andy Lynn here. It's Sunday evening, about to have a bath, as I do on a weekly basis.
Nice.
Over the sports pages and a cup of tea. And I thought I'd just give you an update on what I did while I was doing the ironing. So, of course, I watched Doctor Who. And I watched two absolutely cracking episodes, The Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead. And, yeah, these really do belt along, don't they? At quite a fast pace, and there's a lot there. I mean, it's good that it's a two-parter, because there's just so much storyline there to tell. And it really just, you know, it's part one and part two, if you want to call them that way. There's no clues in part one to how it's going to end up. You know, you don't realise that this library is actually all in a, you know, it's a computer-based thing. It's all about the mind of a little girl, Cal, because you start seeing where Cal is. And I think that's actually a brilliant piece of writing there, Stephen Moffat, to come up with that invention. And, you know, to see how, you know, saving people, you know, when it says 4,023 people saved, it's only realised, oh, what do you mean by saved? Yes, they've saved in the libraries, they've downloaded them. So actually, bring me to the teleport the ball and we're back again. And then the end with River and the companions all being saved, presumably back in this virtual reality. And of course, you don't realise you're not going to, you know, see River Song again. You can see River Song, a younger River Song, and an older Doctor. It is very, very well written. It really makes you start thinking about that. Donna really came to her own here. Because, you know, she played quite a pivotal role, you know, firstly being very kind to the rather thick young lady, but then being taken out and, you know, doctors are going to put her back in a target. But then she goes into the virtual reality and seeing her reacting. And I must admit, it's quite moving seeing her with the children, you know, like all of us, I'm a parent. And it's, you know, her sort of realising those children weren't real. I did find that quite moving. Again, at the end with the brother having three children, I wonder if she actually knows what's, you know, does she know what's really happened to her? Because I think she did, because, you know, she was mirror the Doctor and things like that. So I think that's very well written. You know, it's going to be interesting when the Doctor meets her again, that he knows what's going to happen to her. But of course, she doesn't. Well, she wouldn't do because it's her future anyway. But I think that makes her a very interesting setup. The rest of the cast, I mean, Steve Pemberton, again, you think he's just an idiot businessman. You don't realise, again, you know, what his agenda is. And you realise at the end, you know, he's actually a decent guy, you know. He's, you know, he wants to get in and work out with him and he's, you know, helping save all these people. And he wants to work with him. The two Daves, proper Dave and other Dave. Yeah, slight comedy relief, I think, but that's the way it goes. The Abashan Vanada. I can't pronounce it, you know what I mean. Yeah. And I haven't had a drink yet either. again, I mean, they're really menacing because there's something that, you know, you don't see them, do you? Because you only see the shadows. And it's, you know, the way they work in a library. You know, this is our forest, you know, because these are our leaves. And it's, again, it's something that really makes you think and starts challenging you. Think, you know, what is their rationale? What is their agenda? What are they really trying to do? And again, you realise they're not actually the bad people. You know, I mean, in a way, this is an interesting story because at the end of it, there's no real villains, are they? Because everyone's out there to say things and to do the best. And I think that's what makes it really quite interesting. Alex Kington, really good actress. I mean, you know, she is one of the top actresses. And she really did play well, you know, to play with the Doctor. And you find out later what she whispered in his ear, you know, is his name. But he knew that. And obviously he knows, well, there's something else to come. I think he's realising himself what is going to happen here, you know, because why did he give the screwdriver? Well, you had to find out why did he give the screwdriver? Did he pick up the book? You know, you saw him come back and he got the wallet. What happened to the book? Did he just leave the book there? I mean, that's never explained, is it? Because he took the screwdriver with him. I said, and also the Doctor himself, Dr. Moon, you know, what was he? Was he one of the ones saved? Was he a construct? Never quite sure what role he actually played in this. You know, was he just part of her imagination? Because he was there at the end as well. So there were some unanswered questions. I think they're good unanswered questions. You can think it forward and wait to see what happens in the future. But, I mean, all in all, this really was, you know, Moffat at his best. clever writing, using the pacing, you know, said that it was two parts, allowed it to develop because there's such a lot there. You know, he'd have made quite a good showman, wouldn't he? Anyway, until then, I'll see you.
Eddie is correct.
If that's Moffat at its best, I'd hate to see Moffat at its... Oh, we did. We got 3 years of it.
Dear. Right then, Kirby, I've got a bit of a treat for you because your little request for feedback.
Well, there's been some little bit back and forth between me and Ian Kirk.
That's not feedback. That's a conversation. We don't talk about that. Good effort, though. Well done. Right then, let's have a look. What's your name again? Kirby, isn't it? I'm going to send you some blurb. To make up for the fact that you haven't got anything else to read. There we go. Something arriving through a digital medium.
Here, let me open up the... let me open up a way to read it easier, okay?
Yeah, as long as it doesn't take 3/4 of an hour.
No.
At this point, Adam, would it be a good point to remind you about the new quiz that we're doing this week?
I didn't know whether... Because you hadn't let me know as to whether you would manage to achieve
this.
Yeah,
you weren't communicating with anyone.
I told you last week that it was ready at the end of the podcast.
Did you? Is this the quiz that I invented that I thought would be ideal for you to do, that one?
Yeah, well, I've kind of like taken your idea and...
Oh, no.
How do you say?
Messed around with it too much, yeah.
No. I think the actual proper phrasing is made it good.
Oh, God. Bloody hell. I hope it's not going to be too long, otherwise Mary will zone out.
No, what we should do is we should do the what's called the setup before you do your sponsors, and then while you're doing the sponsors, I can then work out the scores, and after the sponsors, we can do the huge reveal
just before
the end of the podcast. Because I mean, in podcasts, the whole idea is obviously to keep people listening, and boy, will that keep people listening! Is that a reason to listen?
Well, I am intrigued, so I will let it ride or whatever. Anyway, Kirby, have you got this feedback ready yet? Otherwise, I'll have to do some more.
Yes. Scroll down. Okay. Who is this from? Lyndon Terry Miles. Okay.
Yes.
It says, this one is written by some chap called Stephen Moffat. The TARDIS arrives in the biggest library in the universe. There are no people at all. Could it be Sunday and they're closed? No, this is Doctor Who, so there must be a more serious reason. They meet a group of spacesuited people, the leader of which seems to know the Doctor very well and has heard of Donna. Strange that. The leader is called Riversong, who thinks the Doctor should know her, then realizes he hasn't met her yet. That's the trouble with time travel. Stephen Moffat didn't tell David who Riversong was. Only Alex knew and few of the crew knew. David acted as if she was a future regeneration of the Doctor. Miss Evangelista didn't last long. The only person to survive from the group of spacesuits is Mr. Lux, who was the nephew of Cal. Lux was played by Steve Pemberton from The League of Gentlemen. I don't think Donna's mom, Sylvia, would have thought that her daughter, who will never get married in her books, would believe it took till the 51st century for Donna to find Mr. Wright. A lot happens in the 51st century. Isn't Captain Jack from around then? Yes, he is.
Yes.
Moffat loves the 51st century.
Yeah.
Next up, the Doctor meets the second Doctor's son, David Troughton, and I'm going to insert this, and Merlin.
Yeah. who is in Belfast.
Stay safe and well, everyone. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Linda and Terry Miles. And thank you, Kirby, for attempting to read that. That was good.
Hello, tweeting me about podcasts, this is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead. Alex Kingston has played a doctor before in, Time travel was just a way for the doctor to get to interesting past or future places. But Moffat is very interested in the implications of time travel. The Doctor and the Master always experienced events in the same order, but Riversong experiences them in the opposite order. There was an ancient Chinese philosopher who said he had dreamed he was once a butterfly, and when he awoke, he was unsure if he was a butterfly who was dreaming of being a man. The little girl is told that her normal life is a dream, and the library she imagines is real. In the Moffat story The Doctor Dances, the nanobot technology has gone wrong and is turning people into gas mask zombies. In his story The Girl in the Fireplace, the spaceship technology has gone wrong and is trying to kidnap the girl in the fireplace. In this story, the library technology has gone wrong and has saved backups of people but cannot restore them. In the first part, Donna becomes a traditional companion and is there mostly to get the Doctor to explain for the audience. In her introduction, The Runaway Bride, she was about to settle down and get married. Here she gets to experience what married life would be like in a computer simulation. The Doctor tells people to put their helmets on. This does nothing to stop them becoming victims, but it allows the special effects people to put skulls in the victims' helmets. Yeah. The library seems to be obsessed with simulating the 20th century. Perhaps that section of the Dewey Decimal System is dominating the rest. River Song sacrifices herself wearing a space suit. As a child, she also wore a space suit.
Spoilers.
Oh, yes. Actresses of Alex's age complain there are no decent roles for them. Stephen Moffat has created one. Bye for now.
That was very good, Ian. Wasn't that good, Ben?
That was a good
master.
Yes.
I responded to that, correcting his spelling of Dewey Decimal in his transcript.
Right.
I also said I use it for my own personal library, and I have a picture of part of one of my shelves up in my living room. And I also note that I'm a rebel for having a shelf about General Sherman in the Atlanta area, seeing that he burned the city down.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. I'll never get those 30 seconds back,
will
I?
And Ian also says, of course I you do. That goes without saying. Plus, I sent a link to the Chinese philosopher that he was referring to.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
Ben, you've got some text to blurb out. Oh, is he gone?
No.
That's a shame.
I was just building up the tension.
I did have some tension music, but then
with
I lost
a great
it.
Blob of silence.
Zero.
I'll try that joke again. I did have some tension music, but then it snapped.
Where's the joke? I'm waiting for it.
Yes, carry on.
Are you not doing one then?
No.
Okay. I have some words. Shall I read them?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Hold on tight, strap yourselves in, and you might be wise to take off any headwear. The Vashta Narada, book for lunch, or we've been to... I've got to do that again, sorry. The Vashta Narada, book for lunch, or we've been to Dr. Moon, and River died too soon, Dr. Moon, Dr. Moon, which will mean nothing to anyone who wasn't a kid in the 80s in the UK. Dear 20 megabyters, Silence of the Library, Forest of the Dead, is of course a closely studied exploration of aspects of the philosophy of knowledge, proprietary academia, and the dangers of ignorance and the decay of knowledge. Clearly, there's a book to be written on the multifarious illustrations within this narrative. I fell up apart on narrative. In particular, we should note that the repository of knowledge being put out of reach, the Vashta Narada being a manifestation of the perniciousness of ignorance, and the virtual world aspects of the tale. There's nothing like saying a word with gusto and
perniciousness.
Yes, perniciousness. Probably.
Perniciousness of ignorance and the virtual world aspects of the tale, representing both the hopeful sharing and persistence of knowledge, tinged with concerns about the degradation or the twisting of knowledge in that context. Adam, I need you this week.
I know. Kirby, I'm poised.
Kirby, stand down. Sorry, it's not my words. It should be noted that whilst... There is no adequate explanation of what the Vash and the Rada are or how they exist. In fact, they are missing the point that the Vash and the Rada are an elemental hazard being represented within a sci-fi fantasy TV show to terrifying effect.
I could have fit that in.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure you were needed. Adam, that was very good this week. I can see you've been in training. See, practice makes better. We also learn that Kerr Avon from an alternative audio Blake Sevens universe probably created the Dr. Moon maintenance software for the largest library in the universe. All in all, Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead is an innovative, atmospheric and intelligent story in the finest tradition of Stephen Moffat's writing. I just have to clarify.
It's hard to read that, isn't it?
These are not my words.
I could isolate those words in your voice and play them.
You could,
and you would find a lawsuit on your desk before you'd stopped the audio. Crafted from very effective elements, both in terms of what happens and is explicitly evocative. Said and repeated, but also by mystery sculpted from allusions, and equally that which cannot be seen or is left untested or unheard. I'm doing well. The small but well-constructed cast all serve a purpose, as do the real and imaginary worlds which provide the context of this tale. Nothing is wasted, or a mere appendage which could be cut out, leaving an equally well-balanced narrative. If RT, again, not my words, literally just reading them. If RTD was to leave soon after this story, the writer of this should be put in charge of the program as a whole. Guaranteed to be an allied... Jesus. Guaranteed to be an alloyed success in every way. This story is perhaps 13 episodes, not my words, 13 episodes too short, as clearly it will take about this number of episodes to tell Riversong's story on TV, but now she's dead, I guess that won't happen, yada, yada, yada.
Do you think he writes these knowing you're going to read them?
Yeah, clearly.
Okay. You absolutely guarantee it, Mary. he's a swine and a charlatan.
He knows you're
up next. Yes. Well, I've got both pairs of glasses on, but I'm still not doing very well tonight. Next up, Doctor Who and the Terror of Synchronous Repetition, or Merlin meets Peladon.
Yes.
Who's Peladon?
It will be explained later.
Is it a character in the next episode that I can't remember?
Actors.
It's an actor who was on Peladon in the first.
Oh, you lot are so geeky. I've really got to start my geek out again. I've got to try and geek myself up a bit. Jeez. I mean, I know Merlin, but Peladon, I've no idea. Those are my thoughts.
Third Doctor.
All right, shut up. I think it's pointless trying to mention that. As you would know who Peladon was, if he was familiar with the Third Doctor's era. Sorry, Ben, carry on.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Ricky! coming through on the live feed, we have Lillian Robin. It's a Marmite episode, then. Personally, I love this story. Ian Kirk, Andy Nanny watches Doctor Who while taking care of the ironing and other pressing matters.
I won't explain it. Hopefully it will do itself justice.
Lillian Robin, OMG, too pedantic. Probably talking about Kirby.
Very much doubt that.
What, talk about Kirby? Or?
Yeah. I mean, that's just rude of you.
Kirby sort of goes in when Kirsty's on the show. Kirby goes into sort of what would you call it? Like, well, they get those cars that have buttons that make them go faster very quick. Hyper, isn't it? Hyper pedantry.
Kirsty is sometimes more pedantic than I am.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Only when you're.
We kind of have pedantic.
You have a pedant off.
Yeah, pedant off.
Yeah, they have a pedant off.
That's it, yes.
Oh, I mean, that is something we've got to set up, isn't it, before
no,
the podcast?
No, we've had it on several occasions.
We okay, don't need to reset them.
Pardon?
We don't need to have a pedant off. We've
no, because they
them.
Just do it. They just falls into place whenever they're together.
No, just, and it's quite good when they just do it naturally. Just think if we set it up and poke the bear
I have the jingle ready all the time. Anyway, Doctor Who news briefly before we move on to Ben's new series. Devised by me, sort of.
Just wait and see.
It was devised by me. Whether you've changed it completely to
the
be rubbish or not, we'll find out later. Doctor Who
might get a tag as an executive producer.
That's nearly acceptable. Not a lot of news coming through this week. In fact, the only news that came through had to be very sad news because the iconic actress Linda Barron died at the age of 82. Now, Linda Barron has been on lots and lots of TV. Namely, Open All Hours. Where she was magnificent. She was also in a CBB series with a little car, which I can't remember the name of now.
No, it wasn't with a little car. It was with a plane.
Was it a plane?
A dog called Come Outside.
Come Outside. I thought it was a car. Yes, well, I didn't watch it that much.
No, my Chloe used to watch it. When she died last week, she came downstairs and was all like, oh, the lady from that star.
That's right. Like, yeah. She was also the singer. She was the singer on Gunfighters. She basically the narrator stroke singer. On that particular show, and of course, in it she appeared
one of the
in
best
Enlighten,
parts of the Gunfighters.
thank you for that. Yeah, she was the. I think that was the story that was broadcast while I was being born. Funny enough, I may have mentioned that before, but she's been lots and lots of stuff. She's a TV icon, and it's very sad. Of course, her like most iconic role being Nurse Gladys Emmanuel. In the,
how are you related to her?
I'm not related. Well, I don't know. I haven't found
you
out yet.
You must be. You must be related.
Oh,
come
everybody.
On. Yeah.
I'm related to a lot. If you're descended from John of Gaunt, I'm related to you. I did find out that I was related to one of my best friends this week, in fact. It was not particularly good news for him. In fact, it's so bad. I know he's going to take it badly. I'm not going to tell him. I did tell his niece, though, who was thrilled a bit. Not about me being related, but the fact that his family has got... it's no nobility sort of painted through it in a straight line, whereas mine goes all wiggly all around the sticks to get to noble sort of lines. His is just a straight line, straight down to King Edward III, without any breaks or any real sort of effort in doing the research. Very sickening, but there you go. We are related, but it's... Yeah. Can I move on? That was Doctor Who News. Not a lot of it there. So, Ben...
Master, what? I need to add something to a little bit of pedantic to the story we have just been talking about.
God, I dread to think. Go on.
I just posted a picture, a screenshot from of Dr. Moon talking to Cal.
Mm.
And on the wall in the back is a picture of a blonde and a wolf.
Right.
Bad wolf.
Oh, wolf? What, as in Linda Barron?
No.
What are you on about?
Billy Piper. Have you ever watched this bloody program?
What Bad Wolf, you mean?
I'm talking about Science in the Library.
All right.
Bad Wolf. You remember Bad Wolf?
Yes.
Rose?
Yes.
Yes, it's a reference to Rose as Bad Wolf.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Kirby. Right then, so, Ben.
Hello.
The only stipulation with this... Sorry about the burp, everybody. It was uncontrollable. The only stipulation with this is that we are contracted to play the original quiz music for this piece. So, are you ready? Because I'm just about to press the button.
I'm ready.
It feels so good to hear that.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Doctor Who, the quiz, age, birthdays, up and down, guess the age.
That sounds a bit rude.
The title, to be honest, that was the one thing that I hadn't done. Maybe
you might need to shorten that title, but carry on.
Maybe it needs to be refined.
Yes.
A little bit. So anyway, the aim of the game is to guess the age of the Doctor Who actor. That's a generic gender term now.
Their age when?
Now.
No. No.
Now, their age now. When we're familiar with them.
Now. Now.
Yeah. Without looking it up on Wikipedia.
So, what I would like you to all do is turn all of your computers off.
Oh, no! That's the end of the show. Goodbye!
Oh, hold on. No, that doesn't work that rule, does it? In that case, I have to have it... I need you all to pick up a Bible and swear
be
on
funny,
the Bible that you're not going to cheat.
I can't get away with it. I'm actually live streaming on Facebook at the moment.
Well, don't... Well, in that case, you've got to promise not to cheat.
I'm not... I have no keyboard. I'm not going to look up Wikipedia. I will lose.
Kirby, I believe you. Mary, I don't even need to ask you if you're going to cheat, because I know you're not.
I'm too slow at looking things up anyway.
So therefore, Adam will probably win by cheating. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you five people from Doctor who have had a birthday recently, in the last week or so.
Actually, can I say, Ben, just for fun, the people watching the show live on Facebook could also play along just for fun, couldn't they?
Yes, Adam, that is also something I hadn't thought about. So, yes, if you want to play on Facebook, then do.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, Ben. I've got a message from Brandon that says, hey, you didn't play my feedback. I didn't know I had it. Let's have a look. You do your quiz. I might play it after the quiz if I find
it. Okay, we're going to work the count. So I'll give you the actor and their birthday. And you have to tell me how old you think they are now, as in today. That's the 13th of March, 2022, not when they appeared on the show. So, the first person, oh, would you believe it? It's my favourite, Alex Kingston. Birthday, 11th of March. But how old is Alex Kingston? Now, what I will do is I will go around all three of our panellists and I'll get their guesses. They will then score points. A point for every year that they're away from the birthday. And the person with the lowest points at the end of the quiz wins.
Yay!
Or something.
Yes.
So, Adam, how old is Alex Kingston?
52.
52. Kirby, how old is Alex Kingston?
What if I also say 52?
Then I'll fly to America and bop you on the nose.
Please do.
No, I'd never do that to you, Kirby. I can't afford the plane.
Well, what do you want me to do? Go up or down?
No, mate. If you want to go 52, you go 52. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
53.
That was bold. Mary, how old is Alex Kingston?
55.
That's round one complete. Round two. The actor in question is Rufus Hound. Rufus Hound was in...
Well, he was in... Finish,
I think he's in the next episode, actually, that we're going to do. Hold on, I had it all set up, but then the computer crashed.
He's been in Doctor Who, and he's also been in Big Finish.
He was Sam Swift in The Woman Who Lived.
Ah, there you go, that's true. Yes, he was.
His real name is... Robert James Blair Simpson.
And I saw him at the Isle of Wight Festival eating a huge bacon baguette, which very shortly afterwards he was very ill backstage, throwing up and stuff. That's a fact and a half, isn't it? Actually, I've got a picture of him eating that said baguette.
We don't do useless facts in this game, Adam. Okay. But anyway, he was born on the 6th of March.
Yes.
But Rufus Hound, Sam Swift from The Woman Who Lived, how old is he, Adam?
38.
Kirby.
Hey?
I'm not even thinking of who the... I can't picture the character, so...
Well, you can pick your... You're allowed to Google Rufus Hound.
Oh, no.
Oh,
God.
But
no, that not, would possibly... That
he'll
would
come up with his birthday, wouldn't it?
Yeah, would give me the answer, so no.
In that case...
So I get no points.
No.
Oh, just throw in a random...
All the points.
Random.
So you've just throw in a number.
What was the number that Master said?
38.
39.
And Mary.
35.
Lovely. Third person is Professor Brian Cox.
Oh, I love Brian Cox.
He used to be the keyboard player in D-Ream.
He did.
So things could only get better. he was in The Power of Three.
Yes.
The episode The Power of Three.
He was like kind of a throwaway interview with someone.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he played himself. Yes, he's in this country. He's someone who looks at the stars and goes, look at the stars. Ain't they great?
He's a Carl Sagan of British television. Yeah,
that's a very good comparison. Yes.
Carl, well, you know, when we did, by the way, 9 years ago, when we talked about Science of the Library, Patrick Moore had just passed away.
Oh, wow. So, anyway, Adam, yes. Professor Brian Cox, how aged is he?
51.
Kirby.
Since I only remember seeing him the one time, never see him on TV, except, oh, yes, he was in The Science of Doctor Who as well. I remember
yes,
that.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was, yeah.
But
yes.
What did Master say? 51?
Yeah, I did, yes.
Okay, I'm going to continue my streak. 52.
God, you know what? Sorry. You're either going to win or lose by three at this rate, Kirby. And Mary?
55.
Okay, fourth person is Matt Lucas.
Oh.
Matt Lucas. He played the character of...
Oh, he was.
Nardole. Nardole. Oh, he had the lovely duffel coat, didn't he? Yes, that was him. So, Matt Lucas, how aged is... That's what we're going to call it. How aged is he? Are they? How aged are they? Adam, right. How aged are they?
45.
Kirby, how aged are they?
Guess what I'm going to say. 46.
Oh, you're going to put 46, are you? I've already written that down. And Mary?
Who? 48.
48. And the final actor.
Don't forget, I'm going to go through what they've been saying on the live feed, Ben, before you move on. But yes, carry on. Final actor.
What are they saying?
Oh, do you want to know?
Yeah.
Well, Lillian's the only one playing along. But Lillian says Alex Kingston, 59. Matt Lucas, 48.
Oh, hold on. Lillian.
I don't think she's done any of the others.
She hasn't done any others?
No.
What did we get there?
Alex Kingston 59 and Matt Lucas 48. That's all she's done.
Okay.
There was a 59 on its own, but I think she was referring to Alex Kingston.
Okay. Well.
Oh, hang on. I won't say what she's saying next. Carry on.
The last actor is Michael Troughton. Michael Troughton has appeared in several episodes of Doctor Who over the years and is, of course, something to do with the Troughtons, who has got something, a doctor in the past or something. And he played Staff and was Professor Albert in Last Christmas. Michael Troughton, how aged are they? Adam.
75.
Kirby.
76.
And Mary?
58.
I love it.
Excellent. Well, that concludes the first round of How Aged Are They?
First round? What do you mean the first round?
We'll find out some sort of... No, it's the only round probably ever. And we'll work out the scores and we'll come back with the scores after this short break.
Yes, yeah, so the short break that Ben is referring
to. At that point,
to...
we need fake clapping there. We need clapping.
Oh, I'll line that up next time. didn't you could have told me that in advance.
And give him a TV show and stuff like that. Just you know what I mean. Just general little comments that people are probably thinking as they're listening. Why isn't he on telly and stuff?
Anyway. whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Yes, coming soon.
By the way, I'm always surprised, like, listening to the nine years ago, I was doing the same thing then.
Why am I not surprised? Anyway, the Fourth Doctor 11.1 Solo. Now, that means Han Solo, but it features Tom Baker as the Fourth Doctor in it. Another fake Torchwood story called K-Doc Point. It's not, it's fake unless, of course, John Barrowman's in it. Lone Centurion 2. Hang on, I can't see this one. Oh, it's, of course, Rory. We talked about this last week, didn't we? And Lost Stories 6.3, Mind of the Hodiak, featuring the Sixth Doctor and Mel. And then the Ninth Doctor Adventures Old Friends, featuring Christopher Eccleston. Oh, it says Old Friends. I'm just going to click on that, see if I recognize. Oh, it can't be the Brigadier. Looks like a Brigadier. Somebody must be acting the voice of the Brigadier in Big Finish. So those
yeah,
are
I heard
stuff...
that was happening, but Mary would know better.
Mm. I mean, they're replacing all these people. Every time you have a Third Doctor story thing going on, almost everybody is being voiced by somebody else.
I'd be intrigued, in fact, to hear whoever portrays the Brigadier on audio now, to see how they do that. That's all we have, because it won't load up anything else on the Who One page, but that's stuff coming soon, and just peruse their website for books and figures and other genre connected to Doctor Who. Right, lavazi.co.uk have stuff like scarves and things. I have to thank them once again, because when we did FantasyCon in 2019, they sent a massive box of merchandise, only a small amount which
I didn't
sold.
Get anything.
Hey?
You can give me out.
Well, nothing was going to get given away. We hardly sold any of it, but they were very kind in the sale or return situation. So... yeah, so go to their website where you can see Doctor Who merchandise, Star Trek merchandise, women's scarves, pashminas and gloves, men's scarves and gloves. And, of course, there's a blog, a Doctor Who blog, where they take in fan fiction for Doctor Who. And, of course, sign up for their newsletter. That's our bit about the sponsors. Hopefully that's given Ben enough time to tote up the scores.
Can we have the theme tune again, please?
No, I don't. What, hey, that's at the end. The theme tune's at the end. Oh, God. I'll right. Try and do a little segment of it. Hang on. So,
yeah, we just need a little stab to come back from the break.
There you go.
Everybody clap.
Yay.
Hi, and welcome back to How Aged Are They? The game show where we give you five people who have been on Doctor Who and you've got to guess their age, and we give you points relative to your guess of their age and their actual age. Should we have a look to see the scores on the board after the first round?
Yes.
So the first person we asked you to guess their age was Alex Kingston. That's Alex Kingston.
Yes.
Adam guessed 52, Kirby guessed 53, Mary guessed 55. Alex Kingston's real age. She was born on the 11th of March, 1963. That makes her 59 years of age, which means Adam is 7 away.
Well,
Kirby
that's what Lillian
away,
said, because she was
and
cheating.
Mary is 4 away. So they're the points after round one. Mm. Actor number two, Rufus Hound. Adam said 38, Kirby said 39, and Mary said 35. Rufus Hound, born the 6th of March, 1979. That makes him 43 Ooh. Years of age. That means Adam gets 5 points, Eight. Kirby gets 4 points, oh. and Mary gets 8 points. Oh, Mary,
I will
Mary.
Say that Kirby's a jammy sod. I don't
know who he is.
we did all right then. Professor Brian Cox was actor number three. Adam said 51, Kirby said 52, Mary said 55. Professor Brian Cox was born on the 3rd of March, 1968. That makes him 54 years old. Oh. Adam gets 3 points, Kirby gets 2
That's
points.
That's ridiculous.
Mary,
Kirby, you honestly, you are so jammy.
Okay.
Actor number four, Matt Lucas, the comedian with no hair. 1974, the 5th of March he was born. That makes him 48. Adam said 45, Kirby 46, Mary says 48. She gets no points, Kirby gets 2 points, Adam gets 3 points. The final actor was Michael Troughton. It literally all hangs on this. Adam said he was 75, Kirby said 76. Is that tactic going to pay off or backfire? Mary stayed clear of the boy's silly little game. 58.
Michael Troughton was born on the 2nd of March, 1955. That makes him 67 years old. Adam said 75. That's 8 points. Kirby, oh no, he's 76. That's 9 points. But Mary, you're the other side. 58. That's 9 away as well. The final scores are as follows. Are we ready?
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
Bronze medal, sir.
Oh.
26 points. The winner this week on 22 is in America. And is the wonderful, totally non-pedantic Mary Bidwell.
Hey!
That's it for this week's first ever edition of LHRT, has won by Mary Bidwell with a score of 22 points. Well done, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for playing. Good night now.
I knew who, like, three of the people were.
Very well then. And I think that has got legs. I really do. I think that's got TV written all over. Well,
you know, one thing that I like about that is I now can fill in a column on the spreadsheet again.
One thing I don't like about it is your jamminess, Kirby.
Well, no, I mean, I think what he did there was, how many did he one, two, three, yeah, it works on 4 out of the 5 occasions. So, well, maybe that's a tactic to be employed. But next week, to make things fair,
unbelievable,
I will not be asking Adam first.
But it that's fine, because I will not be able to answer. I will not be able to guess well on these at all. Yeah, I expect to never win.
You're picking.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll try and do. If I ever get organized enough, I'll find pictures of the 5 people and I'll put them on the feed. But what I don't want is then people...
No, people will guess that and then they'll look at the age one. Then. Cheat.
No, no. I'll tell you what, no. I'll send them to our super secret messaging
group. No, because they'll still cheat. No, we must not know until you say who they are.
I think it's good enough that you just tell us, like, what they were in.
Yeah.
May not recall that, but, you know, I think that's the best clue.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the Rufus guy's role at all.
Oh, you'll know. When he comes up, you'll know it. Anyway, right. We need to move on to the next bit of the show, which is
Hold on. Just before you move on, Adam.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there was quite enough praise for that last
That was
segment.
Absolutely fantastic. Ben, thank you for bringing back the quiz in the format that I suggested.
What do you mean? I tweaked it massively.
that one was fun.
Right then.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Adam, you can move on now.
Good. What we watched? Well, I didn't watch an awful sat up, an awful lot later. Of stuff this week. I watched episode 1 of Picard, which I must say I enjoyed much more than the episode 1 of Picard series 1. So this is Picard series 2. There's a few little cameos in it from well-known Star Trek and Next Generation sort of franchise characters, and yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. The other thing we watched was a film yesterday called The Adam Project on Netflix, which is a film featuring Ryan Reynolds. Again, a sort of wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey type movie, sort of paying homage to a couple of time travel, genres. Even there's a little, they put something in the background, which is sort of a suggestion to another...
A homage!
Homage to another time travel thing. You'd have to watch it to enjoy it, but it is good. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds is a very watchable actor anyway. He's very funny and he's also very good. So I would recommend watching The Adam Project on Netflix. So, Ben, did you watch any? Oh, for Christ's sake. What?
What's it about?
Oh, do you want me to tell you the story, or is it must be better to watch the film?
No, okay, I'll look it up myself. Is it drama, comedy,
comedy drama. Okay. It's a bit of both. And science fiction, timey-wiminess. Ben, what did you watch?
Anything interesting? Well, this week, I have been mostly watched. I thought that's a homage to Debbie. You see, normally that, because I miss Debbie, you see. Not a lot, really. I watched an awful lot of cricket. England were playing West Indies in the Test match in Antigua. So I watched all 5 days of that when I got home from work until about 10 o'clock, and that took up most of my viewing time. Did watch a bit of darts the other night as well, but me and the wife left the house together, deliberately, to head to the same place on in one car.
What, was it the solicitors to sort out the divorce? Or
no, that would be different cars, sure. I mean, how many husbands and wives travel to the solicitors to sign the divorce papers in the same car? Do you think about what you're saying, Adam, or has it just come out?
Well, I do save money. Petrol is very expensive at the moment.
Although you do retort with a very fine point.
Of course, couples who still live together because they can't afford to live separately.
Yeah.
Again, Mary, you are disproving my my last piece. Anyway, we went to the cinema after we'd been to Nando's, actually, to grab some Nando's, which was very nice because we don't often get out of the house and go anywhere together because we don't like each other very much.
Oh, God. So,
no, I'm joking. She likes me. Of course. If she ever hears this, I'm in so much shit. Excuse my language. And we went to see Death on the Nile.
Isabella saw that. She thought it was brilliant.
It is really good. There's only one criticism I have of it, which is I have voiced this before. I don't see much need in many films for it to go over an hour and a half, let alone an hour and 45 minutes.
So you haven't seen The Batman then?
I know. I lose interest in films because it's just like, when is this going to bloody finish?
Yeah.
An hour and a half is a good length of a film. It gets your interest, gets out, job done, you can go home again. You know, an hour and 45, as I say, at a push. 2 hours, you're starting to lose me. 2.5 hours, I ain't even going. You know, I mean, 3 hours, I might buy the DVD and watch it as a box set. So it was just over 2 hours, and there really was half an hour of fluff you could have caught easily cut out of that movie and made it as good. That's my only criticism. The only other thing about it was I remembered who did it just as they were about to reveal who did it, because I saw the original version with my... No, it's exactly the same. And
okay.
I won't say anything about it just in case you're going to go and see it, but the way that it's revealed, how it happened, if you see what I mean, there was something in that scared me. Well, it didn't scare me, it just stuck with me as a child, and it was that moment. As soon as that happened, I thought, oh, of course it was them. So but it was very enjoyable, and the Nando's was quite nice, even though the garlic bread had gone cold by the time I got to eat it.
Why, thank you, Ben. Kirby, yes. Kirby, anything interesting this week?
I've been continuing moving through Resident Alien. Unfortunately, I get sidetracked and I end up watching lots of YouTube videos. But the main thing I've watched now 3 times in the past 2 days is Turning Red. It's brilliant.
What is Turning Red?
It's the latest Pixar.
Oh, yes, the Panda one.
The Panda one?
I've heard it's really good. I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's available on Disney Plus, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
we're going to be watching. That's on our list. Isabella hasn't watched it yet, so that's one thing that we watch as a family. And there's another film out as well, which we haven't watched yet, which may be on one of the other streaming services.
I watched it twice by myself, and then Fred finally joined me last night at 2 a.m.
Wow.
we watched
it. When do you sleep?
Hey, I wanted to watch it with her, so I woke up and we watched it. And she loved it. She was just laughing out loud. I want to watch Picard. I'm ready to watch Picard, but I haven't been able to coordinate a time to watch it with the geek daughter. So,
cool.
And we're having issues with her getting onto my Plex server.
Well, why don't you book in 3:30 on Tuesday morning? That sounds like a good time.
No, I have to work. fortunately, nowadays, my commute is rather short. It's about 4 feet. So.
Oh, my.
Well, it's very hard to paint walls, other people's walls in other people's houses from my room. I've really got to go to work normally.
Ah, blast. Sorry, there was a trailer for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that I accidentally clicked on and nearly played. Are you done, Kirby, by the way?
Yes, I'm done.
You're done.
Oh, Obi-Wan looks good, except I'm getting bloody tired of Tatooine.
Well, it's a major place in the Star Wars universe. So shut up. Right then.
Kirby, you can get them removed now if you don't like them. Just go and have some lasers.
It's just Luke said in A New Hope, if there's a bright center to the universe, you're on a planet that's farthest from, and yet the entire silly franchise revolves around Tatooine nowadays.
Well, it's a little bit like Star Trek revolving around ships look a bit like the Enterprise, etc.
But surely it's got to be set on Tatooine, because that's where Obi-Wan lived in between leaving them and finding them again.
I know!
Yeah, and Star Wars fans love Tatooine. I'm not a Star Wars fan.
I am a Star Wars fan.
TV film franchise.
Yeah.
I am a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, but and all the sets are available and stuff.
Well, it's actually not a set. It's a giant.
And they had lots of sand on Tatooine, so that's why they used it.
Som bichale, mala tamtitak, makichisa,
jaco. Yeah, all right, shut up. Right then, Lillian Robbins says, couldn't look up the others fast enough. And then she says, I liked the quiz. And then Alan T. Butcher said, Luke was an idiot. Right, I think we should move on.
I didn't mention Lillian's scores because it became quite apparent rather quickly that they had been looked up.
We move on to the part of the show that everybody's been waiting for, so much so that Ben does a live theme tune for it. It's Mary's Bit!
It's Mary's Bit, it's Mary's Bit. She doesn't watch rubbish, it's Mary's Bit. She listens to stuff and she reads books. What's she been doing? Let's take a look.
I'm glad you didn't do the rhyming of the word it. That could have got a little bit awkward.
Well, I could have said she, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of what I've been watching, the one thing that still has me hooked is a show called Severance, which is on Apple TV. Because there's only like one episode released a week, you know, so they keep stringing me along, and I happily go along because it's very weird and it's mystifying, and I'm hooked. So
isn't that better, having one episode a week, Mary?
Yeah.
Rather than having them all there, because like once a week is like proper old school. It's like
that's what Picard is. It's one a week. Yeah.
I do tend to, you know, if the whole box set is there, you know, the tendency is to bleed, you know, one episode into the next. It's like I won't sit and watch a movie because that's like too long of a commitment. But I'll sit there and watch like 4 or 5 episodes of hour long, you know, box set. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, what's the difference?
But if it's not an Irish band, you might not need so much commitment. I'm on fire, aren't I?
The one thing I wanted to talk about, though, is with the introduction of Alex Kingston in this episode, both Russell T. Davies and Peter Moffat, we know, are historically big Doctor Who fans. So I'm assuming that the introduction of her character, River Song, dates back to all the stuff, you know, the TV episodes that they've watched. And most especially, once the TV show ended, that was followed fairly quickly by, and I've talked about this before, a series of books called The Virgin New Adventures, which, because the Seventh Doctor was the last Doctor that we knew, these books pretty much focus on the Seventh Doctor and Ace and another companion that joins them, that is a wisecracking, time-traveling archaeologist.
Oh, my God.
Bernice Summerfield.
Oh, yes, of
course. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that she's a heavy influence on both Davies and Moffat in terms of bringing in River Song. Now, Bernice Summerfield is not, you know, doesn't live backwards or any of the other qualities, but her personality is River Song to the T.
Yes, I love her.
There's a whole bunch of books, The Virgin New Adventures, where Ace is, she's a little older, more mature, and quite a weapons specialist. And she and Bernice Summerfield have a lot of adventures where they kind of compete because Bernice comes into being with, also with her own books, where she travels with the doctor's brother, whose name is Braxiatel. And so she and Ace, you know, are often at odds because Bernice, you know, will sometimes undercut what the doctor's doing because she's kind of working on behalf of Braxiatel. It's very complicated. But yeah, she has her own books, Bernice Summerfield does, and she's the first character that Big Finish started making audios around because they could not get the rights to the BBC characters yet, but they had the freedom to use Bernice. So there's a whole range of Bernice audios that go back to the beginning of Big Finish, and they've continued with her over the years. So even to today, you know, they always have, you know, the new adventures of Bernice Summerfield.
So who plays Bernice Summerfield?
Lisa Bowerman.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And anybody who, you know, wants to do a deep dive into the Doctor, the like Big Finish past or the Virgin New Adventure novels and get a little bit more background on this really interesting personality of Bernice Summerfield, because then we are seeing her in River Song.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Stuff coming through on the live feed. Obviously, Alan T. Butcher said that Luke was an idiot. Lillian Robbins said, how was Luke an idiot? And then he said, new out the Last Kingdom Series 5. So there you go.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That's a little conversation between them two, which I've just put out.
He's just reading what...
I'm just reading what I said, yeah. Right, so next time we've got the one where they're stuck in the... what's that one called?
Midnight,
that's it. So Midnight was sort of interesting
and,
story.
And I just had a cat look at me because that's his name.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, you said. So that's what, hang on, just make sure I can do it next week because as we're heading towards the wedding season, there could be interruptions. But no, Saints versus Man City, that's going to be another disaster. Oh, hang on, what's going on? I thought we'd already played that match. Oh, it's the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. But that will be finishing before we record the show, in more ways than one. So that's what's happening.
Also, I have a note here on my calendar. We're still going to be an hour. The Americans are still an hour closer to you than normal. So. Because you don't change time until the next week after
last Sunday
that.
In March. That's when they go back. So that's next week. Yes, it's midnight next week, but it's not midnight in time. Don't get confused by what Kirby's saying. The show, the episode we're watching is called Midnight, but it won't be recorded at mid... Oh, never mind. So until next time, thank you for listening, watching, and taking part in the show. What's happened to all the feedback? Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
How aged are they? The Bungie Prod production and shall be part of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast until it gets dropped.
Ooh, you got all weird.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.